In a world filled with spyware, ransomware, phish, and more, we need you to be the hero. In this podcast, Information Protection and Security is bringing new ways to fight back against the dangerous actors looking to do digital and physical harm. We'll give you everything you need to know on a different topic of risk every month. Coming to you from IPS with love.
Welcome. It's graduation month for many students. So today we want to talk about some surprising findings that show that young adults, people under age 25, are more likely to fall for scams than any other age group. I'm Lisa Waddle.
And I'm John Nekrasov. And we'll be taking a look at why young adults are so at risk and what you can do to help them. I think this is a pretty interesting conversation that you'll want to hear. But first, we'll hear an interview with the Director of Cyber Resilience at HCA Healthcare, who is also a parent, about how to talk to kids about online safety.
Great. Welcome. Today we're talking with Chris Gable about talking to kids about privacy. And now, Chris, you're a parent. You have a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old. How do you get into privacy issues and security issues online with them?
Yeah, so for us, it was kind of interesting. My kids are essentially digital natives. I mean, they've had devices for much longer than I would have liked because, you know, COVID came around, and that's when we actually gave them access to it. For them, it started differently than how we would kind of describe cybersecurity or phishing tests at HCA. They don't answer email. So for my son, that's where the conversation really started. He was, only way he could communicate with his friends during COVID was through video games. Mm. They were playing a lot of Roblox, and he figured out how to get on GitHub and download hacks for Roblox. And he downloaded a clicker that like auto-clicked through the game for him so he could build up whatever the Roblox currency is. And it turned out it was malware. And so we have a system set up on our network, and I saw a massive spike in outward traffic, and we were able to track it down to his computer. And that was the first time we had a conversation with him about, hey, you got to be careful about what you're downloading from the internet. And like I said, like the phishing conversation doesn't really work. He doesn't answer email. He gets them. They don't read them. But, you know, it started for him.
It's interesting. So, yeah, when you explained to him that, you know, what had happened, the malware, did he brush it off or did he take that seriously?
Oh, he took it really seriously because we threatened to take away his stuff. So he was only 10 at the time. He didn't really understand it. But I was like, hey, we have parental controls. I gave you the password, like, because I went and typed it in for him. I did not do the right thing and check really what he was needing it for. But there's a level of trust that I expect from him and that we have a, kind of a mutual agreement on. Mm. So, and that carries over into other things, like the password for his computer, the password for his phones. My wife and I know those things.
So you set those boundaries.
Yes.
You said, these are the rules.
Yes.
We have to know. We have to be able to get into your phone,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
And so for him, we used to have the parental controls on his phone. He got a new one. We haven't set them back up. We still have parental controls on our home network, though. So there is certain types of content that he cannot get to through the network. He's smart. I'm sure he knows how to turn off Wi-Fi and just use cellular at the house. Thankfully, we're in a dead spot, so we don't have to worry about that as much.
Well, and when we were first talking about this, I was fascinated to find that you said there is a difference, too, between your 10-year-old and your 14-year-old. I mean, just 4 years, but you've seen that conversations with your daughter go a little differently.
Yes. So, like I said, my son was 10 the first time we let him start really playing online games. He got an iPad at that point in time, I think, too. Mm-hmm. My daughter was 6, and she also got an iPad. Not from my wife and I, my mother-in-law actually bought it for her. And so she has a different perspective on it. My son understands some of the concerns. He's been respectful about it. She has used it at a much younger age where she kind of blows it off. She's like, ah, whatever. It's a different conversation. With him, okay. He's really into video games. So it's, hey, this you need to make sure you're not downloading certain things. For her, she has Roblox on her iPad. So it's more about conversations about strangers.
Okay, talking to strangers.
Yes, talking to strangers that we would have when we were growing up. But it changes context of, hey, you get a friend request. You need to make sure and validate this is one of your friends. Mm-hmm. She has the email addresses for a lot of the kids in her class. So it's like, hey, shoot them a message. Is this really you? And we do monitor that for her. We monitor her text messages, who she's communicating with, and we validate that it's, hey, it's someone from school, mm-hmm. it's someone from, you know, Silk's class, it's yep. someone we directly know. So it's a little bit different.
I love that, because that whole idea of verifying, I mean, that's a great lesson for all of us, right? Whether we get a delivery notice from FedEx or something from Amazon, we always say verify it before you just go ahead and enter
Correct.
Your information. So you're teaching her well. It's amazing at such a young age that she's learning those lessons. And you touched on parental controls, because I do want to talk about there are lots of options out there, right, for parents to get help in either observing what their kids are doing, monitoring, and what kind of resources are there out there?
Yeah, so for us, we've gone out of the box with a lot of the Apple stuff. So we have screen time, we mm-hmm. have the content restrictions. There is a different passcode for my wife and I to lock out okay. that than their lock screens themselves. Mm-hmm. We have some friends that have used a tool called Bark. We have not used it, mainly because mm-hmm. I'm cheap. And we get very similar capability just being diligent. So neither of them are allowed to keep their phones or devices in their room at bedtime. So both of them come downstairs. We have a charging station on the counter. We don't necessarily go through my son's stuff like we used to, but we still go through my daughter's. It's less cybersecurity privacy and more cyberbullying kind of stuff.
Oh, wow.
Are the conversations
okay.
we're running into now.
Oh.
It's an interesting time for kids.
Wow. So yeah, I mean, great advice though about having conversations early and continually, it sounds like, and then also setting those rules, right? This is, if you're going to have a device, you have to follow these rules and then making sure that you can monitor. Well, Chris, thanks so much for talking to us. I appreciate
it. No problem.
It.
You have a great day.
Thanks.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Thanks, Chris, again for joining us. This conversation came out of some surprising studies that we were kind of reading as we were researching for this topic, and we really enjoyed kind of Chris sharing some insights on this age group as well. But a variety of sources have been doing research on, obviously, on the demographics that fall for scams, because it kind of points to the types of scams that target specific types of people. And the Better Business Bureau, Deloitte, and a startup called Social Catfish have all done surveys of people who have fallen for scams, asking, you know, how likely they are to fall for specific types of scams over other ones, and also how much money they lose if they do lose money. And they all pointed to a kind of surprising fact, at least in my mind at first glance, which is that Gen Z people are shockingly at risk of losing money from scams.
I know. I mean, this really surprised me too. You know, I think, but then as they explain the reasons why, it certainly made a lot of sense, right? That young people, we can all remember when we were 20 and under, you feel overconfident about your level of risk, right? You feel invincible and probably feel like, yeah, no one's going to take you for any money. Also, that's the age when you're graduating high school, when you're graduating college, you want to be independent. You're taking on all these new independent things. So they may not be as open to hearing about cautions, whether it's in the media, from their parents or their teachers, that sort of thing. And also just they're not experienced enough. You know, it's kind of like a new driver. When you get in the car with a 16-year-old or a 15-year-old in their permit, right, they're just not used to all the distractions and dealing with how high the curb can be and that sort of thing. So they just haven't been online enough to know some of these red flags.
Right, which is interesting and kind of counterintuitive because they're also more online than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So, but maybe it's less of a, there's less of an emphasis on security among that generation, even though they're aware of a lot of different scams, the fact that they're online all the time, surprisingly, actually makes them much more susceptible to scams, sum total, even if they're less likely to fall for each mm-hmm. individual one. Mm-hmm. I think it's also important to note just statistically that in general, these studies can't gather data on people under 18, at least the BBB mm-hmm. one was like that, which means that a lot of this data is kind of dealing with that 18 to 24 mm-hmm. range. Mm-hmm. It's interesting for me, like, as someone who's 25 and is kind of at the higher end age-wise of this age group, I definitely see this where, like, people I know are around my age, like, at the older end of Gen Z, mm-hmm. seem pretty aware of, like, not clicking on random stuff. But I think the younger you go, like in my experience with kind of younger Gen Zers, there is an increasing familiarity with everything about the internet. You know, if you go on TikTok and you want to be an influencer or you want to be a YouTube streamer, or if you play games online like Minecraft or Roblox or any other kind of shooter game or like Call of Duty or something, like you will most likely be in contact with strangers all the time. And it's pretty normal among Gen Z people to be like, I can play with these people, I can friend them on gaming apps and things like that. And that means that you're much more likely to be regularly interacting with someone that you don't actually know anything about compared to someone from a previous generation,
right?
Which I think is important here.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Because when I think of, people at risk for scams of all age groups, you know, I think of my parents, the older adults. But when you look at older adults, most older adults are probably their online screen time in a day is maybe an hour, right? As opposed to this age group we're talking about where I'm not even sure what the average.
It can be eight.
Generally. Hours a day. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So the odds are much greater that they're going to be encountering scams, right? Whether through gaming platforms. I mean, other ways, which I thought was interesting, was through buying things, right? Whether it's a fake Amazon site or a site that looks like Nike, or more likely ads for things that are like, you know, a really great Nike sneaker that's really cheap. Too good to be true ads, those kind of things we think of. And those can come on Instagram, social media, or just be on fake websites. Often, you know, someone will buy that, give their credit card number, never get the item. Their credit card number has now been compromised, right? Even if they've used their dad's credit card, that kind of thing. But yeah, social media, gaming, and e-commerce are kind of the riskiest areas where it looked like this younger age group lost money.
Right. And again, I think a lot of it, like I have younger siblings and also, you know, work with middle schoolers weekly. And in some of those experiences, you can tell that like they're not, especially with buying things, that they're not like critically thinking about the places they're buying things, because they do want to like find cool deals and they want to kind of like go off the grid kind of, and like, you know, thrifting is a thing that a lot of younger people do. And so they kind of take that into the online sphere and they're like, oh, look at this cool thing I found. But you also like can't trust a lot of those vendors as much as you would trust a Target, for example. You know, so there's kind of a, in terms of the reliability, they're often, at least anecdotally, like are more willing to kind of go off the beaten path to find things. And that actually does make you ultimately more susceptible for scams.
And some of the scams prey on that too. I think they try to offer like exclusive merchandise. You know, you might see a Taylor Swift sweatshirt you've never seen somewhere before. Certainly fan based stuff. And other than purchasing, one of the other ways that this age group gets scammed, which makes sense, graduating high school, graduating college, is job scams, right? And how do those work really?
Right. So often, you know, I mean, we all in general apply for jobs online now. That's just kind of the way the job market works, whether you're doing it directly through a company or through a third-party site. And places like Indeed and LinkedIn are just full of scams, as well as obviously great job opportunities. And the problem is a lot of times, you know, if you don't properly vet, and this is true for anyone seeking a job, right? We've talked about it on the show before. But if you submit all your information to someone posing as a real company that actually is not the real company, like that puts you in serious danger of losing your money. You know, often these companies that are fake will ask for like a training cost up front to onboard you to be an employee. And sometimes it'll seem kind of like get rich quick jobs or, you know, those classic scam texts that offer you like a remote job with like, you know, $50 an hour or something. But then there are jobs that seem a little bit more plausible that are like, here's this thing that we actually do. We just need you to get this equipment and then you'll be able to reship things and it'll be great. But it's not actually real.
Yeah. I mean, and we've talked about how HCA has been impersonated, right, on job boards, people pretending they're recruiters for HCA. But yeah, red flags are if they ask for your personal information before you have an offer letter in hand, right? And yeah, and asking you to invest in anything. If they ask you to invest and then they're going to pay you money,
that's a bad sign as well.
Yeah, no real employer will ever do that.
But, you know, that's a case, too, of where maybe someone graduated from high school who maybe hasn't worked before doesn't realize that that's not the way things work. And they may think, okay, I've never had any contact with this person. We didn't even Zoom. That's just the way the world is now. Mm-hmm. So it's important to raise awareness with kids, right, to tell kids, let them know this is how the job process works, right? This is how buying and selling works. And outside of these guardrails, that's where the red flags happen, to really help help them understand mm-hmm. what the real life experience is like.
Right. I think that's the biggest takeaway here. If you're the parent of someone in Gen Z or younger, is don't assume that just because your kid is familiar with mm-hmm. being online and with technology, that they know everything about technology, because they don't. They obviously do know a lot, and they're digital natives, and they've learned how to like function with these tools, but that doesn't mean they necessarily are watching for everything that they should be. So that's a big important note for parents, I think.
Right. So start those conversations, start them early, but keep having them, right? I mean, you may have a conversation when a child is 10, but then as they move into the workforce, as they move out of the house, move to college, right? And then move out of college, start to get their own credit card. Mm-hmm. All of these things that maybe we assume they know because they're so tech savvy, it doesn't hurt to tell them, and maybe they'll thank you later.
Absolutely. And if you are Gen Z, just be cautious. You know, there are great deals out there on the internet mm-hmm. that you can sometimes get. You know, I shop online, obviously, all the time. Mm-hmm. But you just need to always think twice. And if something seems, as we always say, if something seems too good to be true, it probably is.
Well, see, and maybe that's it, that, to survive online and not lose your money, you often need to be cynical. So mm-hmm. maybe we can just hope that these youngsters are not as cynical as we think.
Yeah.
They need to be. They need to toughen up. But yeah.
Thanks for watching and listening on Media Connect and on all major podcast platforms. Subscribe for monthly episodes of From IBS with Love to get much more information on cybersecurity and the dangers of the online world.